Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, this is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. This is a Tisha B'Av edition of Judaism 101.9. It is always good to be with you, and especially on a day like today where we can perhaps share some thoughts in, albeit a different atmosphere, maybe just in a little bit of a different way as well. So let's begin today with a famous story. It's a story that you possibly have heard before. It's a story that you've possibly heard many times. It's the famous story of Tisha B'Av that is related in the Talmud. The Gemara tells the story about Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. And of course, when you hear those names, you hear that they are almost the same, and this is part of the story. It's part of the narrative. What is the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza? And it's interesting to note that one of the major characters of the story is left unnamed, because he perhaps is the person who caused all the problems that involved Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. We also have to think about the fact that Kamtza played no role in the story whatsoever, and yet his name is always relegated to be part of this terrible story about what actually happened or led to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So let's relate the story, perhaps paraphrasing a little bit, but the story is taken directly from the Talmud. And it says, a certain man had a friend named Kamtza, and he had an enemy called Bar Kamtza. So, similar names, but the one a dear friend, the other one an arch enemy. And he made a party, he had a celebration. And to this party he invited all the dignitaries of the town, all the dignitaries of Jerusalem. They came together for this grand celebration in the home of this noble man whose friend was Kamtza, whose enemy was Bar Kamtza. And it included, of course, rabbanim, rabbis, leadership, both spiritual as well as secular leadership of Jerusalem at the time. And he brought them to his home and he had this grand feast. Unfortunately, as things would have it, in those days when people were invited to events, messengers were sent out. And the messenger who went out to take a message to Kamtza that he was invited to the party perhaps was along the way troubled by the fact that he was told by his master, you need to make sure that you invite Kamtza, but not Bar Kamtza. Remember, Bar Kamtza is my enemy. Remember, Kamtza is my friend. And the messenger, perhaps in his stupidity, or perhaps he didn't hear that well, or maybe he had other messages to deliver on that day, he mixed it up. And instead of inviting Kamtza, he invited Bar Kamtza. Confused, which one did he like? Which one didn't he like? Who was his friend? Who was the enemy? Well, he could only be 50% wrong, but as it turns out, he was 100% wrong. He went and he invited Bar Kamtza. Bar Kamtza gets the invitation. He obviously must have been chuffed. Here he got an invitation from this person who he thought was his arch enemy, who hated him. Maybe he was reaching out. Maybe this was an opportunity for a return to the way that it should be, that friendship should prevail. And got himself dressed, obviously, went off to the banquet, went off to the party. Upon arrival at the party, the host looked at him and said, what are you doing here? Get out. Bar Kamtza responded, I received an invitation to the party. You invited me. I had it hand-delivered by your messenger. There's no doubt that I was invited to this party. The host says, we made a mistake. There's been a mistake. I certainly didn't want to invite you. You're my enemy. And I would like to show you the door. Please leave. In front of everybody, Bar Kamtza was obviously going to be embarrassed. And he said, I'm already here. If you let me stay, I'll pay for whatever I eat or drink. Just let's put this down to bad messaging. And let's make sure that no hearts are broken, nobody gets hurt. Just let me stay. I'll eat. I'll drink. I'll participate quietly on the side and I'll pay for whatever I do. And the host said, absolutely not. And he then started negotiating. Bar Kamtsa said to him, you know what? I'll give you half of the costs of the party. And once again, absolutely not. Let me pay for the whole party. Still, the host refused. And he took him physically and had him thrown out into the street. Bar Kamtsa, waking up with a bump on his head and the huge embarrassment, said, since the rabbis were sitting there, the nobility was there, and they didn't stop him, it shows that they agreed with him. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go and cause them trouble. And off he went to the government. He went to the emperor, or the representatives of the emperor, and he said, the Jews are rebelling against you. And they said, how will we know that this is true? And Bar Kamtsa came up with a very, very devious plan. And he said, you know what you can do? Send an offering. See whether they'll offer it for you on the altar. And they agreed. What a great idea. We're going to bring an offering to Jerusalem, to the temple, in the name of the Roman emperor. And here, obviously, is a great test. If they'll offer it, well, Bar Kamtsa was wrong. If they won't offer it, well, maybe there is a rebellion hatching here. The Jews don't want to accept the offerings of the emperor. And of course, it was permitted to take an offering from the emperor. We need to remember that. No problem at all. But the offerings had to pass the same checks and balances, the same standards that were needed, that were necessary for an offering to be brought into the Beit HaMikdash, into the temple. On the way to the temple, Bar Kamtsa deviously made the slightest little blemish on this offering. Some say that it was on the eye, and others say it was on the lip, but be that as it may, it was on the lip, perhaps, of the animal that he made a slight incision, which nobody would have noticed, except for the Kohanim, checking the animal for blemishes before it is offered in the Beit HaMikdash. And yet, you guessed it, it arrived in the temple, the Kohanim spotted it, and they said, we cannot do this, we can't bring this offering. And in fact, many of them said, but you know, this is going to cause trouble. It's clearly coming from the government, it's coming from the Roman emperor. We need to be PC here, we need to be politically correct, and perhaps we should err on the side of caution and offer this offering, because this could be laced with all sorts of issues and problems that it's going to cause us. But Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas said to them, people will say that blemished animals are offered on the altar. They then proposed to kill Bar Kamtsa, and that he shouldn't be able to go and inform against them. But Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas said to them, is one who makes a blemish on a consecrated animal to be put to death? Rabbi Yochanan thereupon remarked, because of the scrupulousness of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, our house has been destroyed, our temple burnt, and we ourselves exiled from our land. Because, of course, what happened was that the offering was rejected. Bar Kamtsa went back to the Romans and reported it. And the siege of the Beit HaMikdash and the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash began. And so the hatred for one person led directly, we're told by the Talmud, to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, to the destruction of the temple in Yerushalayim. Hatred, causeless hatred, leads to death, destruction, and exile.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, this is Judaism 101.9, and you are with Rabbi Michael Katz, and we're talking about things to do with Tisha B'Av. Today is Tisha B'Av. We're still sitting low until after midday, and the low sitting symbolic of our time of mourning. And during this early part of the day, we also have not put on talis and tefillin. We will do that at mincha time, after the midday mark, because things of joy are kind of refrained from. We push them to the background, but that does not mean that we do not have a positive outlook. Now, Tisha B'Av itself commemorates five things, five calamities. Number one is while we were in the desert, it was decreed on this day that the Jewish people would not enter the land. Remember, the spies had gone into Israel, they had checked out the place, they'd come back, 10 of them with a bad report. Only Joshua and Kalev came back with a positive outlook, with the fact that God could allow us or enable us to do anything. And because of the spies and their bad report, and the fact that they instilled this fear of going into Israel into the hearts and minds of all the Jewish people, and the people sat and they cried that night, Hashem gave us reason, unfortunately, to cry, and that was that that generation would not go into Israel. You don't want to go into Israel. I'm not going to take you into Israel. This is not going to be done by force. It's got to be done willingly. And so the generation of the desert had to perish in the desert. And it was all decreed on Tisha B'Av. And from year to year, every year, 15,000 men who had cried that night died. Could you imagine the days in the desert, how difficult they were with 15,000 people who needed to be buried, who had died each and every Tisha B'Av for the duration of our stay in the desert. But then Tisha B'Av also commemorates the fact that not one but two Batei Migdash, both temples, a few hundred years apart, were destroyed on Tisha B'Av. Same fateful day, hundreds of years apart. The first one by the Babylonians, the second one by the Romans. And that destruction left its scar and its empty space and empty place in the hearts and minds and the psyche of Jews ever since then. And for thousands of years since the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, we have been in the Gola, in a diaspora, a physical one, a spiritual one, an emotional one, a heartfelt one. But that's not all that happened on Tisha B'Av. We've got to remember that a great city named Beitar was conquered on that day. Beitar fell into the hands of the Romans. Its people were all killed. And it's termed by our sages as a day, a tragedy as great as the destruction of the temple. We've got to remember this was a time of great revolution, the revolt that was led by Bar Kokhba against the Romans, was quelled by them, and many, many people lost their lives. Terrible, terrible tragedy, and it was a time of great hope in Bar Kokhba and in that revolution and in that revolt and in that overturning of the Romans that was hoped for and the rebuilding that was yearned for of the Beit HaMikdash that was quelled, it was crushed. And so the city of Beitar, destroyed on Tisha B'Av, was also regarded as one of the things, one of the calamities that we mourn for on this day. It was also on that day that the wicked Turnus Rufus plowed up the area of the temple and its surroundings to fulfill what was said by the prophet Yirmiyahu, that Zion will be plowed like a field. And we learn this from the Rambam in Hilchos Tainis, where he brings that as well. So five terrible things that happened on this day. We've got to think about on Tisha B'Av, though, what actually led to it all and what can we do about it? Because the fact that on Tisha B'Av each year we sit and we mourn, that is one remarkable thing. It's incredible. In fact, it was the great Napoleon who commented on coming into a shul in France on Tisha B'Av, where he took a look at and he saw people sitting, crying, moaning, wailing, reading Eicha, sitting low, tears streaming down their faces. And he said, what happened? And they said, our people were attacked and the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. And he said, where? Jerusalem? Temple destroyed? I'm the Roman emperor, or the Roman emperor designate, I think he was at that time. And not the Roman emperor, the Emperor of France. I'm the French emperor, and you haven't told me about this. Who was it? And they said it was the Romans. And he said, those Romans, our next door neighbors, you mean the Italians? They destroyed your temple? Why did nobody tell me about this? I'll go and deal with them. I'll go give them a clap. You know, they deserve it. And they said, no, you don't understand. It was thousands of years ago. The temple was destroyed by the Romans a long, long time ago. And Napoleon said famously, a people who mourns like this for their temple that was destroyed so many hundreds of years ago will certainly see it rebuilt. And it's with that kind of an attitude that we actually look at these calamities, at these difficulties, at these destructive forces, at these things of sadness that have befallen us on Tisha B'Av. To just sit and cry? Of course we have to sit and cry. And of course we have to mourn, because we've got to realize what it is that we lost. But it's once we realize what it is that we lost that we need to begin rebuilding. Rebuilding in our minds, that Beit HaMikdash, rebuilding in our hearts, in our souls, the things that caused the damage in the first place, and getting ourselves back to that space and that place where once again we are and can be rejuvenated. And what an incredible thing it is that thousands of years later, after thousands of years since the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, the Jewish people are still mourning for the destruction of the temple. What an incredible thing it is that Jews still have in their hearts to understand that this destruction was only in order to enable the building of the third Beit HaMikdash. The fact that we have a hope, not only in the future, but a hope in today as well. And the fact that we know that we are in a time and a space and a place where we can do something about changing negativity into positivity, about turning around the bad and the sad and the negative things that have happened to our people over so many centuries, and that we still believe and that we still know, and we know with every fiber of our being that God Almighty is going to bring an end to this pain and the suffering, and is going to see to it that very soon Mashiach is going to come and we are going to get out of this diaspora, out of this golos, out of this exile, an exile, a physical exile and a mind exile, a heart exile, an exile from which any other nation in the world would have not recovered. We are still here to tell the tale. Your people, God, are still mourning. They are still sad for the loss. But we know that you are the one who can turn this around, and we know that you can take us out of here, and we know that you can change this all. And we're willing to do our part. This is a partnership. This is us coming to you, God, and begging you to change what you can change. And we've pledged, and we do pledge, and we undertake that we're going to change what we can change. We're going to fix what we can fix. We're going to rectify what we can rectify, and we're going to replace hatred with love. Now, I find it interesting, personally, that the names of the people in the story that we told about Kamtza and Bar Kamtza have the one thing in common, which is the word Kamtza. Now, if you take the word Kamtza and you look at it and you think about it, the word Kamtza in its, if you look in any dictionary, I guess the word Kamtza means a fist. You know, when you clench a fist, that's a Kamtza. And by divine providence, the names of these two individuals were Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. And perhaps the idea in my own thought of a Kamtza is the idea of a fist, a clenched fist. When somebody comes towards you with a clenched fist, it is belligerent. It is warlike. It is coming to give you a smack, give you a hiding, show you belligerence. Not very friendly at all. The only time we clench a fist in Judaism, and we're careful that we clench a soft fist, actually, is when we touch our hearts at the time that we say, Ashamnu Magarnu Alchei Shechatanu, when we're pleading with God for the sins that we've committed and apologizing to God, and we tap ourselves on our hearts and we say that this unsolid, not solid fist, we want to have it opened. And perhaps this is the idea then of the kamtza and then the bar kamtza, or the kamtza, the clenched fist and the fist that has to be relaxed, that has to be opened. That yes, of course, we have to be able to defend ourselves, and of course, we need to do that in the strongest way possible to defend ourselves against the onslaughts of negativity, of evil that come up against us. But the idea of the open fist towards those around us, to open our hands. There is nothing worse than a person whose fist is so tightly clenched that he cannot part with what he perceives to be his own money or his own abilities, that he refuses to share with anybody else. And open that fist, open it up and give with an open hand. The idea of a helping hand, of an open hand, of a giving hand, is certainly not the fisted hand that is depicted by the name Kamtza. And we have this beautiful concept embedded in the whole story of Tisha B'Av. It's not about clenched fists. It's not about closed hearts. It's about opening our hearts. It's about realizing how great God is and how great His people is. Am Yisrael has stood for thousands of years through thick and through thin, through difficulties, through destructions. Anti-Semitism. The anti-Semitism of today that has resurfaced over the last couple of years was always there. It just once again allowed to fester, allowed to resurface, and yes, instigated very cleverly by those who have managed to manufacture it and do it. And it comes up against us, and yet we as the Jewish people know the truth. And we stand here proud and we say, you know what, God, after all these years of death, destruction, of misery, of campaigns against us, of anti-Semitism, of those who have this absolutely I don't know what the word is, but there's no way that you can water it down, this vicious, violent wish to destroy Jews, to destroy Judaism, to destroy God, actually, to destroy goodness in the world, to destroy everything that Torah and Judaism stands for. We're still here, God. We're still here to tell the tale, and we're still here to tell you that we are ready for you to take us out of this galus. We're ready for this geula, for this redemption. We are ready for the building of the Beit HaMikdash HaShlishi, for the third temple. We're standing here, God, ready to go. We are ready. In fact, there were many people who used to always have a bag packed, ready to go. You know, like a person packs a bag before they're going overseas, or a person packs a bag. A woman famously packed their bag before they're going in to have a baby, right? You want to make sure that you don't have to be going around looking for your cosmetics or your things that you need when you are in labor, when the moment of birth has arrived. There were people who used to have bags packed, ready to go. Mashiach is going to arrive. We're ready. Ready to run. If we have to run to the airport, or we have to get to the launch pad or whatever it is, we're ready to go. Ready to go. And in fact, many people in the afternoon of Tisha B'Av would spend time preparing for the coming of Mashiach, cleaning the house, making sure that if Mashiach arrives, we're ready for him. But there's nothing more important than preparing ourselves in our hearts and in our minds and in our souls for that moment, for the coming of Mashiach. And on Tisha B'Av, where we're really tested, this is the moment of darkness that can bring the greatest light. It's the moment of difficulty that can lead to us understanding fully what it is that we've lost, what we need to replace, what we need to have back, and how the yearning is affected by the darkness, by the difficulty, and by these calamities, to really, truly know what we're missing, and therefore what we need, what we want. And there's nothing more important on our minds at the moment than the Geula, the redemption, and the coming of Mashiach.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Welcome back. It's Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. It is Judaism 101.9 here on Chai FM, and it is Tisha B'Av. It is that day of mourning, but the day of looking forward to a brand new morning, with the coming of Mashiach. And therefore, on this powerful day, of which there is now only about, 6 or 7 hours left of Tisha B'Av, perhaps let's go through the things that you need to know from a technical point of view for the balance of the day. Well, we sit low and are in the more stringent part of the morning until after midday today, which I imagine is about 10 past 12 here in Joburg. So about approximately half an hour to go, let's say, of sitting low and of being in the more intense part of the morning. We should be saying kinot if you are able to run up until that time. Thereafter, we may sit on regular chairs. None of the other stringencies about Tisha B'Av are lifted yet. We daven mincha. Mincha prayers are said in the afternoon. Everything that was left out in the morning prayers, the Psalm of the Day and various other things that people say at the ends of davening and so on, are said. We put on talis and tefillin. We daven mincha. The afternoon prayers are said with tefillin on right up until the end of those prayers. There is a Torah reading that takes place at mincha with the reading for a regular fast day and the mincha haftorah that goes with it as well. After mincha, we put away our talis and tefillin, and then we continue fasting until nightfall. I think in Johannesburg, that's a couple of minutes after six this evening. So not that long of a fast, actually. Not that difficult. The weather is great, and all of those things as well. But in the afternoon, one may start preparing for the... it's not a Yom Tov that you're not allowed to light fire or cook and so on. One may prepare for after the fast. But we've got to remember that after the fast this evening, we still may not eat meat or drink wine. That, in fact, carries through until midday tomorrow. After midday tomorrow, we may eat meat or drink wine. The other things about the 9 days, some of them do fall away tomorrow morning, and that is the laundering of clothing and taking of haircuts. That can be done because it is Erev Shabbat, because we're looking forward to Shabbos, and it's a short day, and there is a leniency there to be able to take a haircut, to bathe and to launder clothing. That may be done in preparation for Shabbos on Friday morning, but we do wait with the eating of meat and wine until after midday. And this is because while the temple was destroyed on the 9th of Av, it continued to burn into the 10th of Av, and so the 10th of Av is also a day that's in the shadow of the morning, and we still mourn a little bit on that day. In fact, there was a debate amongst the sages as to whether the 10th of Av should not also be a fast day. It was too much to ask of people to fast for 2 days. Then the debate about whether you fast once you saw the end or once it was at the beginning. It was decided that we fast on the 9th of Av because of the beginning of the destruction, which ended on the 10th. And that is why the 10th day of Av, which is actually 10 days and not only 9 days, actually has a remnant of this Tisha B'Av, or the 9 days effect on it, all the way through till midday tomorrow. We've got to remember then, though, that when we go into Shabbat, Shabbos itself, of course, is Shabbat Nachamu, a time of comfort. God promises us double comfort. He's going to comfort us. Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami is going to be read from the on the Haftorah of Shabbat coming up. We also read the Ten Commandments, and perhaps there we have the statement once again of the fact that here, God, we have been through suffering, we've been through difficulties, but we know the truth, we know where it all lies, and we know what the cause actually was of all of this in the first place. And we are going to adhere to the principles, the rules, the regulations of our Torah, because we love you, God, and we know that you love us, and we know that this whole event and all of the events of Tisha B'Av are going to be turned around, and we're going to be seeing the greatest and most wondrous, beautiful time when Mashiach will come very, very speedily. Now,
get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Yes, Judaism 101.9 with Rabbi Michael Katz here on Chai FM and coming to you live on this Tisha B'Av day, nearing midday of Tisha B'Av, and the more intense part of Tisha B'Av is almost over. But while we think about the things that we're not allowed to do, what about the things that we should do? What about the things that we can do? Well, based on our introductory story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza and the difficulties that the problems and the destruction that a bad decision of hatred actually brought into the world and caused all of this destruction in the first place, perhaps it is an opportunity for the balance of Tisha B'Av, and of course in the days going forward, to reverse that, to show Ahavat Chinam, to show wanton love for others, to recognize that we're not perfect, and who are we to judge the perfections or the imperfections of others? Let's look more kindly on other people. Let's end faribbles. They don't belong in a Jewish community. They don't belong in our community, and they don't belong for Jews anywhere and at any time. If there are things that you think people have done wrong to you, well, how about you be the one to go and to broach the subject and end the faribble and stop the fact that people don't talk to each other? It's nonsense. The idea that there are those who cannot bring themselves to speak to others, to people who they feel have wronged them, and sometimes the wrong is just that they didn't say hello to me, or they forgot to invite me to their daughter's wedding, or whatever the case may be. En faribbles. Go out now this afternoon and do an act of chesed, an act of kindness, whether it's in ending a faribble, or it's bringing food to somebody who doesn't have, or it's giving tzedakah, or it's doing a charitable act, or perhaps in the afternoon today, helping somebody who doesn't ordinarily put on tefillin to put on tefillin, because tefillin are donned or put on this afternoon after midday, to go out and to help people who perhaps were disenfranchised from and have a poverty perhaps of knowledge. Go and help somebody, teach somebody something, show people the right way. Go out and do acts of goodness, acts of kindness. There are so many mitzvahs that you can do this afternoon. You may not be making brachas on the foods that you're eating, but you can bring brachas into the world through the good actions, the good things that you do, to encourage, to help, and to make sure that never again can there be a story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Never again can there be people who feel that they are ousted or outed or made to feel uncomfortable in your presence and in the presence of the Jewish community. Let's make sure that we go out and we create the perfect framework for Mashiach to come into, where there is love, where there is mitzvahs, where there are mitzvahs being done, where there are actions of kindness, and where there is unity, where we come together as one and we say, God, we're here. We are ready. We're ready for Mashiach. We're ready to put an end to this golus. God, please take us out. Please see to it that never again will we have to have a sad Tisha B'Av, but that in fact Tisha B'Av will blossom and flourish and become the Mo'ed, the beautiful, beautiful day that it was always meant to be, a day when Mashiach will come, Mashiach will be announced, Mashiach will have arrived, and all the scourges and disasters of Golus, of exile, will become relegated to the past. But our present and our future will be one that is bright, filled with God's light, and filled with all the wonderful things that we hope and pray for every single day. So please, God, very soon that time will arrive. And I want to wish you the rest of the fast, that it should be good, and that in Mirtzah Hashem, please God, Mashiach will still come even today, and hopefully very soon, and you'll have a great rest of the week and a great Shabbat up ahead, and look forward to being back with you again next week, please God, with albeit a little bit of a happier, a little bit more normal, and hopefully a Mashiach-filled time together that we can spend on Judaism 101.9.